I was determined to just be the exact opposite of what success looked like. Because when you looked it up in the dictionary, you certainly wouldn't have found someone that looked like me there. So I was like, well, I'm going to do this out of spite, I guess you could say, right? I'm going to be successful out of spite.
Welcome back to The Growth Effect. I'm Sarah Stockdale. When we were planning for the show, right at the start, we said we wanted to talk about what it's like to launch and grow a business, what entrepreneurship really looks like. Have you ever been out to a venture capital pitch competition? I've been to a ton of them, and there's a certain person you just expect to be on that stage. If you're in this space, you might already know what I'm talking about. Let's be real. It's mostly white dudes. Mostly young and in hoodies and from very specific schools. And if you're a white male founder, that's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, but listen up for a second. Walking into a room where no one looks like you is intimidating. I've done that countless times, and it always feels like you showed up to a party uninvited. It sucks. But I'm also a white woman, and that comes with a lot of privilege. So it's even harder for racialized entrepreneurs to be in those rooms. And I'm not just talking about one conference here. Entrepreneurship is that room. And we need that room to reflect all of us. Today's guest is building an incredible business, and she makes a pretty grand entrance. In season two of The Growth Effect, we're still talking about what entrepreneurship really looks like. And I think, maybe, entrepreneurship looks a little like Vivian K.
I needed to look quote-unquote presentable because for Black women, if you have curly hair, this was, you know, back in the early 2010s, you know, having curly hair was deemed unprofessional and unpresentable. So it was preferred that we had straight hair to mimic, you know, European beauty standards. And, you know, in the early 2010s, we started getting tired of that crap.
Vivian is the founder of Kinky Curly Yaki. They sell high-quality hair extensions for Black women, something she needed when running her previous business in wedding decor. In some ways, it's the oldest business story ever told. Vivian saw a problem. She created a product to fix it, and she knew people would pay for it. And they did. Today, Kinky Curly Yaki is a seven-figure business, and what's most impressive is that Vivian got to her first $1 million by herself. It was 4 years before she hired a single person. Vivian was a single mom, growing her business with no external funding for 4 years. That kind of slow, self-driven growth is just as valid as the rocket-fueled venture capital model. But there's a reason she had to do it this way. That conversation after this. Whether you're a large multinational company or your business is still an idea, HSBC is here to help you grow. They can help your reality match your vision. And if that vision crosses borders, they do too. Whether in Canada or in the 53 countries and territories they have commercial presence, HSBC meets you where you are. Learn more at business.hsbc.ca.
I wanted to look for hair extensions that looked like my hair, but I couldn't find it because it was usually buried underneath the silkier textures. And so then I thought, well, why doesn't anyone just sell kinky hair? But because I had my little side hustle turned full-time business and it was really going well, six figures, I liked it. I was buying Coach bags and going on vacation. You know, I got lucky once. I probably won't get lucky again. I'll just file the idea in the back of my head. Then I went to a networking event and I sourced the product, the manufacturer, like all that for my own purposes. I was trying to solve my own problem. Another Black woman comes up to me and she's like, sort of pulls me aside the way Black women sort of speak in secret. She was like, girl, who's your hairdresser? How did you get your hair that long? Like, what's your regimen? You know, looked around like we were doing a drug deal. And I was like, girl, this is a weave. And she was like, I would buy that. And I said, light bulb. Because she said she would buy it. I had bought it. There's got to be at least a dozen other women that would buy it too.
There's so many people out there who see a problem and they want to fix it exactly the way that you did. And they see a market for it. But there's a degree of courage and confidence and figuring out how to get started that stops most people from starting businesses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What did you do differently that got this off the ground?
I wasn't really aware. I want to say I was just blissfully ignorant. I wasn't really aware of how difficult it was to have a business. But I just really just focused on what I knew and what I had and what I could do. And I figured, well, that's got to get me somewhere.
And I find when I talk to entrepreneurs, there's a lot of this. It's the exact opposite mindset of what most people are saying. So you're cataloging, here's what I do have, here's what I can do, here's what I know. And most people are cataloging, here are all of the things that I don't know, and here are all of the things that I don't have, the brand or the network or the investors. And you're just saying, like, I have enough, I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, when you spend your life being underestimated and people telling you, oh, you don't have the corporate it, like you're not a corporate player, you're not a team. When you always have people always telling you you're not fitting into society, you're used to just, you know what, screw it. What's the worst that could happen? I'm just going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was determined to just be the exact opposite of what success looked like. Because when you looked it up in the dictionary, you certainly wouldn't have found someone that looked like me there. So I was like, well, I'm going to do this out of spite, I guess you could say, right? I'm going to be successful out of spite. I'm going to show all those people who won their science awards at high school and math, and everyone thought they were so smart. Well, just you wait. I'm going to do something special. I don't know what that is, but I'll figure it out.
The more that I do this, there is so much to successful entrepreneurs that are just like, I had something to prove. I had people to prove wrong. I had a whole bunch of people that underestimated my greatness, and I decided to tell them to screw it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they always tried to fit me into this box or a circle or whatever they wanted to fit me in. And I always said, I am not a circle. I am not a square. I am a rhombus. I am a parallelogram. I am all those shapes. You don't even know what they look like, but that's me. That's me.
I love it. Tell me about what it was like in those early days. Like, what did you feel was a mistake that you made, or a time that you felt kind of paralyzed by running this business?
Well, you know, the business took off while I was running another business. So, you know, at the time I was on top of the world, you know, on the weekends I would do weddings, you know, another thing that I loved. During the week I sold hair and I've shipped packages, and I loved, although I don't like routine, I like structure.
Mm.
So I really thrived on creating systems and processes that I could follow. And then the thing that really tripped me up was getting pregnant.
Tell me about that. Wow, you're running two businesses and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm pregnant.
Oh, I'm pregnant. Wow, this was not expected. And what really threw me off, or what paralyzed me with that, was that, you know, not only now was I running this business and I had no idea what I was doing, but it was doing really, really well. But now I have this life I've got to take care of. At the time, I was sort of desperate in two areas. I was desperate for help in running this business that was just growing and growing and getting to almost $1 million. And then I had my personal life with my son and my son's father. And so that I made the huge mistake in trying to save my, I don't want to say huge mistake, but it certainly wasn't something I would advise anyone to do, which was, in order to keep both things intact, which was my business and my family, I gave my son's father a percentage of the business.
Okay.
And that was something, even though my gut told me, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And I was like, no, you got to do it for the kid. Because, you know, now you got a kid, you got to start thinking about the kid, right? Mm. Well, big mistake. Biggest mistake. Now, you know what? I am saying it's a mistake. It was a mistake. Because I put my own self-worth and my value and all the things that I'd worked really hard to create, and I put my son in front of that, which sounds terrible, but really, if I'm to do well and if I'm to be happy, I need to put myself first.
Yep.
Because if I'm happy, then guess what? Your kid is happy.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I put him first, and that made me miserable, right? And then eventually, that all fell apart. So now here I am, a single mother, running a six-figure business at the time. And I had no idea how I'd even done it, but it was happening to me, right? So here I have, you know, I have the baby and I have a business and I'm just running at full steam. And all the while, I was depressed. Because, you know, you see all these people who are entrepreneurs, they're doing super well, they've got everything together. And here I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a single mother, I'm running this business and it's doing really well, but I don't know what I'm doing. And I can't tell anyone because that makes me look bad. You know, because it's not like at the time people were being, or entrepreneurs were being transparent about their struggles and failures and all that. It was just keep it together, show off your Gucci, and that's it. Just make sure everyone thinks you're fabulous.
How did you get through that? Like, what did you find? Were there people around you that could offer you support that had done this before? Like, what was that structure for you that you had for yourself?
No, there was no one around me that had done it before. Yeah, I'm one of four girls. My parents are, you know, hard blue collar working, you know, immigrants. So I was the crazy entrepreneur. I was the black sheep in the family anyways, right? So I was the only one who knew what I was doing, apparently, right? Because there was no support. So I leaned on them for support in terms of helping to raise my son. But I had to sort of lean on myself and the internet to help me figure out this whole e-commerce thing, right? And so it was a very lonely time.
Yeah.
Like I always say, being an entrepreneur, outside of being a mother, it's one of the loneliest things you can do. But one of the things that I really leaned on outside of my family was those, remember those systems and processes that I talked about?
Yeah.
Because, you know, listen, motivation is fleeting. It all depends on how you feel, right? But for me, where I found success was in consistency. So I'd set up a structure for myself that I could do no matter how I felt.
I love that.
So, you know, every single day I did the same thing day in and day out from, you know, from 9 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon so I could get the things done. And then in the evenings I would fall apart. And then I would wake up again and just go through the motions. But I would do it because I had the systems in place and I could do it consistently. And that's really what the key to success is. It's being consistent in your business and everything that you do, even when you don't feel like it.
It's that compounding growth effect. Yeah. If you keep doing it, things will, it'll grow if you keep at it. But the mental health part of that, I think, is a piece of entrepreneurship that we're not really talking about enough. And I've had a couple of guests on this podcast who have been really transparent about their journeys. And I'm I'm an anxious human with a panic disorder. So like, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to my club. What did you do to get out of that falling apart in the evenings cycle that you were in?
I just let myself cycle through it. You got to hit the bottom at some point. And then once you hit that bottom, you know, all you can do is look up. And actually, truthfully, that bottom hit when I kicked my partner out of the business. Mm. Because what was happening was he had a percentage and he was getting salary. He was getting all that, but he wasn't doing any of the work in any department. So family-wise or business-wise. So, yeah. You know, I hit that bottom and then all I could do was look up and said, okay, let's get back up and crawl back up. Sometimes you just have to go through it. In order to get through it, you got to go through it.
So talk to me a little bit about funding. So I'm a bootstrapper. You're a bootstrapper. What led you to build your business in that way? And how do you think about bootstrapping a business now?
I just honestly didn't know any better. I just thought that this was how everyone started their business. Oh, you just, you know, you roll up your sleeves and you make it happen. Little did I know. Little did I know that there were white men out there getting money for ideas that they had no proof of concept for, or customers, or anything like that. I honestly didn't know what bootstrapping was up until 2018.
Wow.
And it was only because I had, you know, finally come up for air. So, you know, I'd done a couple of years, you know, a million plus, and I'm like, ooh, and I started to realize, I think I need more money to go past a million, right? And so I'm like, well, how do I go about that? What do I do? I remember going to the bank and the bank was like, yeah, so where's this money coming from? Not offering me money to help me grow my business. They wanted to know where the money was coming from and where it was going. And that's what they typically do because it's FinTrack. They just need to, you know, for fraud purposes, but they weren't like, hey, you have about $40,000 US in your bank account that's just sitting there. You know, what do you say? Like, can we help you? Can we help? No, I didn't get any of that sort of stuff.
No offer of a loan or line of, like, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
You mentioned, I heard a story about an ant farm, about a pitch competition.
Oh, yes. Well, that's where I learned about the bootstrapping, that I was a bootstrapper. As I went to a startup event in Montreal, and I'm just watching all these white guys, one by one, go up there and pitch. And one of these guys pitched an ant farm, a solar ant farm, or some foolishness like that. And they were like, wow, we're super impressed. And all he had was a box that had like, I don't know, glass or some foolishness on top. And they were like, yeah, let's give you $100,000. And I'm like, wait. So this guy doesn't even actually have money coming in. He has an idea and they're going to give him money for his idea?
I still am blown away by the entire venture capital economy, by how that symbiotic relationship continues. I think it's 3% of women are funded by venture capital, 0.64% of Black women. We get pennies.
Yeah. You know why? It's because we tend to, women and Black women or even people of color, we tend to start businesses that service our own needs. And our needs don't make sense to old white men.
They really don't.
Right? Like, I don't understand. What do you mean? You're selling hair extensions to Black women? I don't understand that. Chad, do you understand what the, I don't understand. Ben, do you know, Brad, you know, I don't know what that, all that is. Nah, we're going to pass. But ant farms, that's the future.
It's funny because there's obviously a lot of, you know, structural misogyny and racism in place there, but there's also a lack of empathy and imagination. That there people can have problems that I don't have.
Yeah.
So you grew to 7 figures without running a paid ad. Like, I am a growth marketer and I teach this stuff. This is what I've been doing my whole career. And this is the best story. Like, I want to know tell me everything.
Well, you know, remember when I said I was looking to solve my own problem?
Yep.
So what I was doing was going into Facebook groups. I was going into forums. I was going where other Black women were and where they were gathering to talk about our hair. So in doing that, I, of course, was just being myself. So I was just Vivian. And so I'd created like a personality for myself in these spaces. I didn't reveal who I was. I just thought, okay, well, here's a product that I have that solves your problem. So buy it. And they were like, okay. And it wasn't until I actually revealed who I was, like someone outed me, actually. So someone in a Facebook group, I forgot to put the who is privacy on my domain.
Yep.
And someone decided they wanted to be slick because they were like, well, who is this successful business that everyone's talking about? And we don't know who this person is. So then they found out who I was. And the funny thing is what they meant to sort of, I guess, slander me and to break me down was actually the rocket fuel that I needed to get to $1 million. Because people remembered me and knew me from the forums and the Facebook groups. They were like, oh, well, now that I know that she owns it, I want to support it even more.
The opposite effect of the like basically effect. Doxing you.
Exactly. So what I did was I was creating a community before that was a thing. Right. And so then I just built my business on top of that. And the fact that in the industry, in the niche that I'm in, a lot of the businesses are not owned by Black women. And so then it was very rare at the time to see a Black woman who actually, like, we're owning our own beauty. And I was very much a proponent of we need to take back our beauty. We need to tell them what we think is beautiful, not the other way around. Right. And by doing that is by wearing textured hair extensions that look like our hair. So that's basically how I did it. I did it through that. And then I was doing, and then I started doing influencer marketing before it was called influencer marketing.
You're like on the edge of all of these trends. You're just finding them before.
But you know what? I was just doing what made sense to me.
Yeah.
Right? Because I see, that girl likes to wear kinky hair. Let me just send her something and see what she thinks. And then she turned that into a vlog, right? And then posted it on YouTube and then posted it in the Facebook groups. And then it just sort of, that's how it went.
Yeah. And now you're getting the SEO juice of great videos that are answering the questions that people have about their hair. Like you're doing a lot of really smart, intentional digital marketing by just solving problems.
Right. Exactly. And then I was doing SEO and I'd learned that on my 9-to-5, right? So I took all the skills that I'd learned from my 9-to-5 and just applied them to my business.
Finance has a crucial role to play in tackling climate change, and HSBC wants to help you and your business transition to a low-carbon world. They are committed to supporting responsible economic growth and enabling the low-carbon transition. In Canada, HSBC can help you navigate the world of sustainable finance. They deliver a global banking experience with sustainable solutions and insights to support your business. Learn more at business.hsbc.ca.
I saw a tweet And I want to ask you what you think about this. So I saw a tweet from an incredibly successful entrepreneur. So much respect for this person. But it said, you have to move fast because your competition is trying to kill you. And I had this like visceral reaction to that, that that is not why I am building. I'm not building a business to kill another business. I just want to hear kind of your reaction to that. How do you think about that?
First of all, there is more than enough for everyone.
Yes.
There's more than enough. So for me to just wake up with that mindset and choose violence, oh, yeah, I'm going to go out there and slaughter other businesses. How do you wake up with that on your heart? It's not about that. If that's what it's about for you, then I don't know. You're probably one of those people who start businesses every 2 years and you sell them just to slay competition and just make the money. That's not for me. I think, you know, the true idea of entrepreneurship is to help people, is to solve problems, is to live on your own terms. It's to be the person you want to be, but you don't need to kill everybody in the process and slaughter people. Like, nah, I don't know. There's more than enough for everyone. If that's you, then good on you. But I'll sit beside my murderer. Beside my girl, you want to sit down? Come sit down. Let's have a talk. Why do you want to kill everybody?
Do you need a coffee? Are you hungry?
Do you need a hug? Because
probably yes.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. No, I don't agree with that. I can understand the sentiment, but it doesn't have to be that way.
You did this by yourself for 4 years. How?
Girl, I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I do know. Like I mentioned those, you know, those systems and processes. And I also have mommy brain while I was on top of it. But really, I even those days where I was just like, I didn't want to get out of bed and I didn't want to do what I wanted to do. And maybe I should just go get a 9-to-5. I just really focused on why. Why am I doing this? Because that's what's really going to get you through. Money cannot be the sole driver of the reason why you get up every day. So then I thought, I want to create a legacy for my son. I want to show him that no matter what society thinks of you and, you know, all the restraints that society tries to put on you, that you can indeed create your own future and be the best thing that you could possibly be for yourself and for the people that you love. So that's what I strive to do, is to just do the best thing that I can for the people around me and the people that I love, especially for the women that look like me, or especially for the immigrant, you know, the little girl whose parents don't really speak English and she has to do all the English translations for them. And you know, she was supposed to be a lawyer and now she wants to do something else. And, you know, I'm just doing it for those people who are just unconventional. And I don't know, I'm getting emotional talking about it, but there's just more to it. There's more to it than the money.
I want to talk about a couple of things before I let you go. And I don't know if you're this kind of person, but I'm the kind of person who I wake up, 4 a.m. is my witching hour, like my anxiety witching hour. And I have, you know, conversations with myself at 4 a.m. too often. Are you a 4 a.m. conversation person?
No, I'm a don't go to sleep until 4 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
4 a.m. person. Okay. Yes. So because I'm a single mom, you know, I put my son to bed. And I think this is true of a lot of moms, is that once your child goes to bed, it's like that's your alone time, right? So then you stay up as late as possible because this is the time you get to be by yourself. And so I do that anxiety thing before I go to sleep. So it's like, okay, let me go to sleep. Okay, wait, no, you got to reply to that email. You got to do this. Okay. Oh my God, you totally forgot to do that. All right. And it's like, I was just trying to sleep. Like, can I get my... No. So I wouldn't say I have the witching hours, but I certainly have the I'm going to bed at 4 o'clock thing.
How do you feel about the intersection of kind of 2020, 2021, motherhood, entrepreneurship?
Oh, well, I certainly learned which balls were glass and which balls were plastic. And I really started to pay attention to what balls those were. So there's this quote from an author. Her name is... Can't remember her name for the life of me right now, but she's a romance author. We'll figure that out later.
I'm just jumping in to say that we did figure it out later. The author is Nora Roberts.
What she said was, you know, you have to figure out which balls are glass and which balls are plastic. Now, family isn't a glass ball and work isn't a glass ball. Like, it's not as clear cut as that. It's like, okay, that deadline you have on Friday is a glass ball. Crazy sock day can be a glass ball. You just have to be really aware of which balls are glass and which balls are plastic in your life. Because, of course, plastic bounces, right? So if crazy sock day isn't really a big deal, if you're a mom, you know, to your kid, then you know what? They'll be okay if they have normal socks that day. Same thing with the thing that you're supposed, the email you need to reply to. It can probably wait because that's a plastic ball. But that deadline is a glass ball. Time with your partner is a glass ball. Time with your kid is a glass ball. So you just have to be mindful of which balls are glass and which balls are plastic. And 2020 really, really showed me which balls were glass.
Does this feel like you thought it would? Does success feel like you thought it would?
I thought I'd be a lot richer.
Don't we all?
I really, really thought I'd be a lot richer. Like, to look at all the obstacles I've overcome and the adversity that I've faced and, you know, all the things that tried me and I managed to come out the other side, that's what I'm proud of. Money is a byproduct. Money comes and money goes. But just that feeling of, yes, I actually left my mark. Like, I've made an impact. Like, my son wants to grow up and be a kinky curly yaki person.
What is better than that?
He doesn't know what entrepreneur is. He knows what a kinky curly yaki person is. And that, to me, Sarah, that's it.
That was Vivian Kay, CEO and founder of Kinky Curly Yaki. As I was talking with Vivian, I kept thinking of who we cast in our heads as successful founders. We think about the Elon Musks and the Mark Zuckerbergs, usually white men who went to Ivy League universities, men who had access to networks with an incredible amount of wealth. We forget that those journeys aren't just stories of entrepreneurship. They're stories of privilege too. Those are the stories we hold up as the model for entrepreneurship, conveniently forgetting the structures that were in place to help those founders succeed. If these are the stories we hold up as the model, we need to question why they all look and sound the same. What great companies are being overlooked? When only 3% of venture capital goes to women, and only 0.24% of that goes to Black women, it's clear which companies aren't getting those resources, and which entrepreneurs have to work twice as hard to get half as much. We all need to be asking, who is being kept out of the club and why? I want to see stories like Vivian given that spotlight. A Black woman who bootstrapped a seven-figure business, who couldn't get any outside funding or a spot on the pitch competition stage, who didn't have the Ivy League degree in the fancy boardrooms, but instead connected to a real problem and built a huge community around solving it. Who made a million without spending a dime on ads. She's juggling 100 glass and plastic balls and learning what is okay to let drop. Vivian is the kind of entrepreneur who hit rock bottom and clawed her way back up to show her son and the rest of us the way. And not only do I want to hear more of these stories, but I want to break down the structures that make these stories far too hard and far too rare. I want to see more stories like Vivian's with more funding, support, and more spotlight. And we need to be doing everything in our power to make that happen. Thank you so much for joining us again for our first episode of season 2. We're so happy to have you here. Click follow or subscribe. And if you didn't last season, maybe leave us a rating and review so that more people can listen alongside with you. The Growth Effect is produced by the Globe Content Studio in partnership with HSBC Bank Canada. Our producers are Jay Coburn and Katie Jensen of Vocal Fry Studios. Our executive producer is Kieran Rana. I'm Sarah Stockdale. Thank you for listening.